Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abena, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast. The only rugby podcast gives you all the news, views and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter, we are at Mall Over Podcast, Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook, and you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Pods and the Google Store and lots of other places. This week, funnily enough, 2 weeks in a row, we've got a full house. Ben, Doug and Phil are all here. How you doing, gents?
Good. And better.
Yeah. So, first of all, Phil, you're injured. Like, less than 2 weeks before the Mall Over Invitational, you are injured. And you got injured without playing a single minute of rugby. Is this correct?
That is absolutely correct. But I was in my kit. So, it nearly counts as a rugby injury. So, no, I was down with the Hornets down at Vior on Saturday.
And we all know how much we love Vior on this podcast.
Exactly. Postage stamp pitch, shithole of a club. for my customary away trip position on the bench, and was providing a bit of opposition for the line out in the warm up, and came down onto the prop's foot and flipped my leg sideways and a full 90 degree lateral misplacement of my ankle has now led to me having a foot that's twice the size and a nice shade of purple. So I am going through the entire global ice supply and popping pills like it's for fun.
And your participation in the Mall Over Invitational is what's your injury designation currently? Doubtful?
Is he
day to day, Doug, do you reckon?
Day to day, mate. I'm frankly devastated because that's any hope of any turnovers gone.
Yeah.
Because none of us three fuckers are going to get any, are we? let's be honest about it.
Has Mrs. Farm Vet got any vet wrap at home?
Oh, yeah, trust me, there's heavier stuff than vet wrap being used. But yeah, I will be taking a full equine vet's car's worth of bandage material with me.
Yeah, that's the good stuff for an ankle injury.
If I can strap it up, I'm hoping that if I can get the swelling down and strap it up to the point where my ankle doesn't actually move, that I might be able to be on the pitch.
Well, if not, there is a lovely spot in management for you, Phil. We're going to need some touchline coordination. I'm pretty certain of it. Judging by all these players that seem to be turning up, which is really, really exciting. I can't wait for the game. It seems like it was ages ago when we first started talking about it, and they were like, oh yeah, it's going to be ages away, we won't even bother thinking about it, and now it's next week. And it was all, I woke up in a bit of a cold sweat last night thinking about loads of stuff that I should have done or need to do specifically for this game, which is a bit weird. So but we're all good, we've got a bar, we've got some food, we got players, We've got opposition. We just need a kit, which is on its way, and we are all good. And I'm very, very much looking forward to it. So I hope you boys are too. I've set up a Just Giving page. So for those of you that want to support Rugby Against Cancer and that are fans of the podcast or listen to the podcast and don't won't be able to make it down to the match, but want to contribute or show some support, you know, any amount is gratefully received. We have got a Just Giving link that we've set up for the match. So please go and donate on there. It'll be on all of the social media feeds. So go and check that out. And you never know, there may be even some jerseys left over come the end, if not everybody buys them, and you know, we can sell them off to you guys as well. So that's where we are at the moment. I caught up with Paul Archer earlier today from Nexus, who has kindly sponsored the jerseys for us. And we had a bit of a chat about what rugby is for him, what sports and stuff he's involved in, and how he come about sponsoring the All Over Invitational. So let's go and hear from Paul. So I am joined by Paul Archer, who's one of the directors of, are you director of Nexus? Joint managing director.
Yeah. So me and my business partner, Alex Phillips, are joint owners, managing directors. Yeah.
Lovely. And Paul and Nexus have kindly agreed to be our main sponsor, shirt sponsor for the All Over Invitational, which is amazing, which is going to help us raise loads of money for Rugby Against Cancer. So first of all, thanks very much for getting on board, mate. It's very much appreciated.
Absolute pleasure.
Let's just go back a little bit, because me and you go back quite a way. When I first joined the RAF, Paul was one of the first people I ever met when I got to RAF St. Morgan. And I remember walking in, I was 17 years old. 17 years old, walking into the Naffy Bar at St. Morgan, which like was the quietest, smallest place in the world. Nobody ever went in there. And he took me under his wing, and I remember the next day going into the mess hall, and a load of the regiment lads go, "Oh, Archie, found yourself a new pet, have you?" And I will remember that to the day I die. And from there, we had plenty of fun times. We played a bit of rugby. We had a bit of fun. We got pissed a lot, but that was military days. So, you know, early. Sort of late 99, early 2000, that was. And here we are, 21 years later, both in very different situations, back together.
Unbelievable. I can't remember doing that or the morning after with the what were they called?
The Rock Apes, the One Squadron, Rock Apes.
Yeah, One Squadron, who were... If I was to go back now, it would be quite intimidating. But back then, chip on our shoulders like that. Yeah, right, lads. Yeah.
Absolutely. It was great fun. As I say, we played together for RAF St. Morgan a few times. Spent a few nights out in Newquay, you know, supplementing the local establishments. And it was all good. It was all good fun. And now... you're a joint managing director of a big business that's involved in quite a lot of sport type stuff as well, aren't you, Nexus? So can you tell us a little bit more about what you're involved in?
Yeah, so we're in a fortunate or privileged position to be involved in quite a lot of high level sports and sponsorship and charities. So I see a big the reason why I do it, or why Nexus do it, there's a big similarity between high performance elite sportsmen and business. So we like to be associated with elite sports people, which is why we sponsored the All Over Invitational rugby match for a fantastic cause, Rugby Against Cancer. So no sport is too big or too small. So 6-7 months ago, we did a charity football match at Ashton Gate, the home of Bristol City, which Nexus also sponsor. We're one of two elite sponsors for Bristol City, where we raise money for the Children's Hospice Southwest. So it's an absolute pleasure and privilege to be involved in such a great charity to raise some money for Rugby Against Cancer. And I suppose the icing on top of the cake for us is to to meet some old cronies from the RAF St Morgan days and put the cement boots on and come out and have a run out and embarrass myself for 5 or 6 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've put some feelers out. I know there's some, you know, this won't mean anything to anybody listening to this podcast, but Jace Mattia is knocking about.
Is he really?
You remember Jace?
I do, yeah.
There'll be a few, hopefully there'll be a few recognisable faces for you from the old St Morgan days that we can drag out. I've put some feelers out over the last day or so to see what we can come up with. It'll be great to get you, Grace, in the field. And then more importantly, having a good old catch up afterwards. As I say, like Paul and Nexus have been kind enough to sponsor our playing kit for the All Over Invitational. And with those shirts, what we plan to do is sell them off afterwards as part of a match fee and sell them to the players for a nominal fee. And every shirt then and every penny that goes into that will go directly to Rugby Against Cancer. So if we can raise a few quid for them, that will be fantastic. We can have a great time as well and get back to some proper old school rugby values, which I think over the recent period has been lost. And, you know, like with the COVID situation and people not being able to enjoy themselves too much, we can have a real good drink up and a bit of a sing song. And I know the opposition are well on board as well. So it should be a really, really good afternoon down at Newquay Sports Centre. So, and what's more important is you're going to play. I'm so glad you're going to strap some boots on, mate. I've got some kit for you. I've got some shorts and socks. Have you got some boots, or do we need to get boots as well?
I've got some boots. I bought some boots for the charity football match, which I must say I got man of the match as well, Ashton Gate, and we had lots of ex-professional, ex-Bristol City legends playing as well. And it wasn't a fix because it was my charity event. It was a genuine man of the match performance. So I don't think I'm going to get man of the match at the rugby match, but I'll definitely make an effort. I would like to play at least 5 minutes at my old position of... can you remember where I used to play?
Well, I was just about to ask if you're still going to be a dynamic, ball-hungry seven.
I think I will be for about the grand total of 5 minutes, and I might drop back to outside centre, I think.
Well, chuck you in the centres. That's fine, mate. You can play wherever you want. And what we hope is everybody gets some decent game time. Everybody knows what it's all about. So, you know, there's going to be no helper leather whippets out there, hopefully, that are going to be running around people and smashing people. It's just going to be a good, hard contested rugby match, I hope, with some like-minded people that we
can not touch. Then it's not going to be too hard contested, is it? It's not going to be
Oh, it's not. I don't know about that, mate. I played the other week against a touring side for the first time in about 5 years, and they were all pissed, but they were all 20 to 25, and they were fit as
bunches. Where are you playing these?
I played at 10 and 12.
That magical left boot still going.
The wand, mate, is still around. It's still absolutely, absolutely there. Well, before I let you go, I know you spend a bit of time with some rugby players as well. And I recently saw some photographs of you sat on a beautiful train with Francois Lowe. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, so again, going back to the connection of high performance sport and business, fortunate enough that being in contact and with Victor Abugu, so went on the famous British Pullman train with for a British Lions preview. So met Francois Lowe a few times. What a top bloke. Spend time with a rugby World Cup winner is pretty awesome, and hear the stories. Craig Chalmers, Colin Chavis. So hopefully we'll get a bit of support from the boys and some videos and stuff we can promote. And I think there'll be a Just Giving page coming out as well. So even if it's 50p to 50 quid, whatever you can spare, it's a great cause. Rugby Against Cancer. Let's put our pockets or our hands in pockets, not our pockets and hands, and just donate what we can. So I think we'll get that out, Russ, to socials and what have you, and share that, and just do what we can. And we'll have some good backing, good support. And yeah, as I said, it's great, and I'm proud that Nexus can support such good cause.
Yeah, there are lots of people that are that can't make it next weekend, but I know that would love to support. So we'll get that just giving Paige and stuff shared out as soon as possible in good time so that we can make sure that the Rugby Against Cancer gets plenty of money. And we do what we can, you know. It's great for us to get together. It's great for us to have a rugby match. And it's great for us to be able to do that all while raising a few quid for an amazing charity. So, like, mate, it's absolutely amazing that you've thrown your support behind this. I couldn't thank you enough. And it'll be great to see you next weekend. We can have a catch up and we can chuck a ball about for a bit and then have a beer. So,
amen, brother.
Amen. Thank you very much for joining me, mate. And I will speak to you very soon, or if I'll see you next weekend. Right. There we go. That is that's Paul, one of the managing directors of the Nexus Group. And they do, as you said, sponsors Bristol City. He's been fortunate enough to spend some time with Francois Lowe. He's hopefully going to get us some nice videos from Craig Chalmers and Colin Chavis and stuff like that. So fingers crossed, and we'll look forward to seeing Paul next Saturday at the Invitational.
Francois Lowe could probably make up for Phil's turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, imagine the scenes if Francois Lowe turned up. St. Austell seconds, yeah, and we get
probably,
Francois
probably
Lowe.
Probably happen, won't it? Yeah.
I mean, you've got a bit of a Francois Lowe look about you. Like, if Francois Lowe had a mini-me, Doug, you could...
I'll take that. Gladly.
You got a bit of a Francois Lowe look about you. I'm just looking at your face now.
You're such an odd man, Russ.
I don't like it.
If you could put on a South Africa jersey and get some pictures from behind, we could put some spoilers out on the internet and build up a bit of attention.
Oh, it'd be fun. It's going to be fun, whatever happens.
An extra large South African kids jersey on you. Look just like Francois Lowe.
I mean, it's taken
a weird...
I don't
know what to do anymore with this information.
It's taken a real turn, isn't it? Right. Let's talk about some Premiership rugby, shall we? Week two of the Premiership. Well, you can't even call them surprising results because... You know, I think we all kind of predicted most of it. One of the most interesting ones, Friday night, Gloucester versus Leicester, should I say. Leicester, Ben, are looking very good. In the first two matches that I've seen, I watched the highlights of the Exeter game, and then I watched 90% of this game against Gloucester. Apart from a few, what I would call game management issues maybe towards the end, Leicester look like they're in a very, very promising place.
Yeah, they somehow let Gloucester get pretty close to them despite being by far the best team on the night. But yeah, they're a good side now. They've kind of got their forward pack back. It's obviously not like the classic Leicester packs quite yet, but it's more competitive than it's been for a long time. Martin's playing well, isn't he? And the front row, well, two of them scored, and I actually think Dan Cole's playing really well at the moment. You see him around
doing
the pitch
his job,
as much
he?
As anyone. Yeah. You know, and we've said, I think we said last week, once they get, you know, parity or on top in the scrum, just in the forwards in general, then Ford is lethal picking out runners. Ndolo is just a weapon, isn't he, when he's playing well? I mean, you can definitely turn him, but, you know, give him the ball in hand and he's lethal. And, you know, they're like you say, they're a good side now. I'm going to try and do this without making a pun on his name, but Harry Potter played really well in that game. You know, that finish was outstanding. I think he's been really good. In the last couple of matches. I think I said enough about Stewart last week, but again, he's just completely rock solid under the high ball, which is giving confidence to those around him. And they seem like a team with a plan, and they seem much more coherent than some of the other teams.
They look confident. They look confident, don't they? There was a couple of times. There was a period. There was a passage of play. They turned Gloucester over. It was when Genge scored, just before when Genge scored, and they turned over a line out on their own 22, and they saw some space, and they ran it from really deep.
Yeah.
And the Dolo sort of chipped and chased forward, led to the yellow card for Moyle. They went through a couple of phases, and then Genge went in the corner, didn't he? And it was that type of demonstration of turning defence into attack that we've not seen from Leicester for quite some time. They've struck me as a team that's, whether that's personnel or whether that's lacking ambition, they struck me as a bit of a team that's tended to just be really safe as to not make mistakes. Whereas at the moment, they look like they're high energy. They look like they're confident.
I think that was the move, wasn't it? Where they just saw it really early. Someone picked a long pass to Ford, and Ford picked another long pass, and that's what set Nadolo away. And that was playing heads up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Stewart. Obviously, he offers such a presence in that backfield. He's so commanding under the high ball that I haven't seen a fullback, it's specifically an English fullback, even pre Mike Brown, that commands the ball so much when he's coming to get it. And it gives so much confidence and assurance to the players around him that
everyone's going to come getting out of the way. Everyone's getting out of the way. All the Leicester players they know he's coming for it. So they're just leaving it for him. I mean, I think the nearest in terms of under the high ball I can think of would be sort of prime Rob Kearney.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Matt Perry.
Yeah, I can get that.
Tall, rangy, commanding under the high ball. He kind of glides when he's running as well. He kind of glides across the pitch. It's almost effortless. You don't think he's actually sprinting. When Matt Perry was at his best, that's how he used to look.
When he goes for those high balls, he almost looks like a foot taller than everybody else around him. He goes in with that much confidence and that much determination that, as you say, I don't think I've seen him drop one. I was struggling to think of somebody. There have been kind of classy fullbacks who will, you'll trust them to catch every ball that comes near them, but they've done it through kind of skill and timing, but they don't dominate the space in the way that he does. I'm struggling to think of anybody who dominates the space like that.
No, and he dropped one, maybe two.
I think there were two, pressure. But they were ones, they yeah. were almost ones that a lot of others wouldn't have got to.
That's the point, but I'm not bothered about him dropping high balls that he is trying to command the situation. What I don't like from is when they're tentative and nervous and you just don't ever think they're going to catch the ball. Every ball he goes for, you think he's going to catch it. And you know, he as a human being, sometimes he's just not going to do it. But more often than not, he will. And more often than not, the very presence that he offers will put chasers off. It will make people think twice because they know how confident he is in coming to get it. And that's the difference. You watch Elliot Daly, for instance, and I only use that as an English example. When he was challenging high balls in an England 15 shirt, you just never really had any confidence that he had any confidence in himself. Whereas you watch Stewart do it and he backs himself to get and catch every single ball that comes his way.
he's 100% natural at fullback, which Daly never was. And yeah, it's not particularly Daly's fault. I mean, the only player I can think of that did dominate the air like that is, and he doesn't remind me of him with the rest of his play, but just under a high ball is everyone's favourite homophobe, the Australian.
Oh, Folau.
Is he?
Folau, yeah. He was one that would dominate in the air. And I think, you know, safety, he's similar. But yeah, I think Stewart, I said last week, he's going to get a boatload of England caps. He's perhaps not the quickest, and, you know, you can have all these sort of tactical dreams of having two playmakers and, you know, attacking from deep every time. But I think the benefits of the security it gives your wingers and your fly half when he's kicking, and the forwards, you know, forwards love a secure fullback because it means they're not chasing back for scrums every 2 minutes because they've dropped the ball. So I think, you know, he's got a massive future with England.
Yeah, agreed. The other couple of people that I was impressed with on Friday is the young centre, specifically the young centre, Dan Kelly, who looks really good. And he came into the team sort of middle of last season and a little bit of an unknown quantity, but he looks like a really, really good young player and someone that they can really sort of build a midfield around. And then you mentioned the likes of Potter, Stewart, you know, Nadolo is a little bit older, you know, all being pulled the strings by Ben Youngs and Freddie Burns when Ford is unavailable or they look to rotate. Leicester look like they are, like you mentioned it, Ben, they've got a plan and a purpose and they look like they know what they're trying to do.
Which is something you can't really say of Gloucester because, you know, they were playing Morgan at second row last week, moved him back to eight. You know, it just doesn't seem that there's a lot of, you know, they seem to be fighting fires more than anything.
Yeah. Doug.
What?
You were going to come in then?
No, it was me.
Sorry.
I was going to say, can we read anything into the fact that Leicester didn't clear their bench like every other club seems to do? They left three of their players on the bench. They left Burns on the bench and then didn't change two of the front row. Does that mean they don't have the faith in the bench, or does that mean why change it if it's working? But then Gloucester were kind of coming back at them towards the end.
Do you not think that a lot of substitutions in the Premiership is all very formulaic? It's right. Yeah. We are going to sub our tight end and our hooker on 55 or 60. This is what we're going to do, regardless of how the game's going. This is what we're going to do. And maybe it's Borthwick saying, well, actually, we don't know. Why do we need to do that? Like, we're playing on a Friday night. We've got an extended period because we won't be playing till the next Saturday or whatever, or the next Sunday, maybe even. So we don't really need to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for it. It's not like they're playing Cornwall, Devon, and you take three subs and people have given up their day to be there. They're professional sportsmen, and if they don't get on the pitch, they'll have to get over it. It's just so different from the norm at the moment. And I don't know, does that mean that he's got concerns about how Freddie Burns is settling into this side? I don't know. Or is it just, as you say, things are working, why change it? You've only got George Ford for probably two-thirds of the season.
Maybe it's a case of just we'll play George when we've got George Ford. We're going to play George Ford. Why wouldn't you? The front row is an interesting one, but maybe, you know, you say they weren't being particularly stung up front or in the set piece. So that's usually where your fresh props tend to aid you, and you see a lot when one team starts to get a little bit the upper hand in the scrum and start conceding a few penalties, that's when coaches tend to panic as well, isn't it? So it's one of those, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it type of scenarios.
Yeah. But on the Gloucester point, I said it last week, Gloucester to me looks like a club that is just being really poorly run at the moment. And even when they cut to the coaches in the in their boxes, they don't really look like they've there's much cohesion between the coaches or there's much of a plan. They all look confused.
It's a strange one, isn't
it? Think there's a lot, there's a little bit of the baths going on there, isn't it? Where it's a lot of coach speak and motivational sayings, but not actually a lot of do. I've seen them both games this season now, and they just look off the pace. Like, I'm not sure what's happened to Johnny May. With the wingers, the back three that they've got should be threatening all the time, but I just don't think with the man in charge that they've got there, I don't think that they're ever going to be priority number one. It seems like they want to build around being big and aggressive and hard, and they seem to value the maul more than they do the quite clearly excellent back line that they've got.
There isn't a lot. There isn't a lot that tends to get outside of 12 trees in Atkinson. It's
no
those weapons, and it doesn't. You know, and Mark Atkinson has been a really good player for Gloucester, and you know, to get into that England training squad or you know whatever his purpose is in that squad, it's difficult when you've got Johnny May and Ollie Thorley. You want those guys to be on the ball as much as humanly possible, and you know Thorley played with. Who else was on the wing? Seabrook on Friday night, and they barely got any ball, and Kyle Moyle, well, you know, he was at Cornish Pirates a couple of years ago, and that's not a slight on the Pirates or Championship rugby as a whole, but you know what happened to Jason Woodward, like. Anybody know where he went? Is he still injured?
I don't know. There seems to be a lot of players that just seem to disappear without much fanfare, isn't it? They just seem to go and that's it.
When we were discussing them last week, I spent a bit of time afterwards looking at their squad on the website and they look incredibly thin on the ground. Where you go to other squads and you've got kind of, well, at least three players for every position. And a hell of a lot of depth there. And Gloucester look like they've got a squad of about 22. I think it's inherent. Well, we've been talking about them being crap for a couple of years, really, haven't we? Probably 3 years.
Yeah. I found out, well, sorry, wrong
no,
team.
No, you go.
No, wrong team, sorry. we were talking. In line about Worcester's fly half Finn Smith, weren't we, that ended the season playing pretty much every game. I found out this week he's playing for Ampthill. So,
oh wow,
I'm not sure there's the problem is with these fringe players, they seem to go, it's almost like minor league baseball, they can go and you're like, oh, I'm sure he played for them a couple of years ago and now he's somewhere else, you know. And I feel like there's a lot of those Gloucester players that could quite easily fit into that bracket.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You just got to go through that, through the squad. Like, definitely Moyle and Seabrook. Stephen Varney is another one. Ford Robinson. They could just sort of...
Yeah, he's another one that seems like his online persona seems to be bigger than his actual... playing ability.
Yeah, I hear that. Can we talk a little bit about Adam Hastings looking like he'd been chained to a radiator in Beirut for the last 18 months? Literally, right? I used to think he was quite a, never stocky, but like quite well built and rangy. Now he looks really thin. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that. He looked really slight.
I agree with that. I felt like he just seemed, I don't know, little.
Yeah, or just lightweight. Like it, yeah, almost like he really, won a competition. Really, it was really bizarre. He looked like he was more built like a 1500 meter runner than a sprinter. Like in that sort of analogy where you'd expect a rugby player to be more like a sprinter, a more muscular, more, you know, more athletic, as opposed to being, well, it's quite skinny.
According to Wikipedia, he's exactly the same size as me. You don't look it.
No.
Not bare ankles.
Because you're massive, Phil.
Yeah, I'm fat. Yeah.
You're like a man mountain.
I mean, that old adage of the muscle weighs more than fat. Is that one of those things?
Yeah, yeah. You also went to my school.
There you go. Right, let's move on from Gloucester Leicester. Doug, you were at the Stoop, I guess, on Saturday for Sarah Cox's. Is it Sarah Cox or Sarah Cox? I mean, it's spelt Sarah, but we'll call her Sarah.
Sure.
I mean,
do what you want, Russ.
Do what you want. For her Premiership rugby refereeing debut, Quinn's on the winning trail against Worcester. What did you make of the game? You were in the big D chair, were you? Big Dougie D.
I was the man in charge, talking to Stu, the TMO. So I feel like I vicariously met Sarah Cox that day, but I didn't. Weird game, really weird game. Quinn's, I mean, I guess not weird if you've watched Quinn's for the last, I don't know how long, but just never seemed to settle down. There were two teams that Worcester looked dead and buried, and then out of nowhere came out and just sort of stepped up their game and took it right to the wire. And I don't know. I don't think what Quinn's did could ever really be repeated. You know, they hit such a vein of form at such a perfect moment that for that to happen again would be really weird. And because of that, I can't tell if Worcester are decent and Harlequins aren't as great as we thought they were, or if Worcester have got markedly better, because I don't think they played amazing rugby. I mean, they gave away a shit ton of penalties, like a shit ton of penalties. And you couldn't, I mean, what I would say is Ollie Lawrence's line for his try at the start of the second half was pretty much the perfect line you want from a player like him, just coming off round the corner really quick on the ball with pace and just was unstoppable from there. But yeah, two teams that I can't really make my mind up about. Are Harlequins really good or are Worcester pretty average?
Well, Harlequins, that whole Harlequins story looking back has got a real Leicester City vibe about it, hasn't it? Do you think? Like that perfect storm of circumstance, you know, style. They've rode the crest of that wave and they got everything they deserved. You know, they can't take anything away from what they achieved, but it felt like they were only ever one defeat from it all crashing down around them. Yeah. Because if they had it's easy to say if they'd lost in the semi-final, obviously they couldn't have got to the final, but you know what I mean? Like, on that run, as they got towards the semi-final, as they made that late push, like they won one of those defeats or one of those performances. There was a game, was it Bath, Ben, where they came back and they scored a last gasp try in the last minute or the last play of the game at the Wreck. And
what I remember about them when they played Bath towards the end of last season was, although their attack was brilliant, their defence was horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bath carved them up almost at will. But Bath's sort of tissue paper front row just let them down. as it did a lot of times last season. And, you know, with my huge powers of prediction, I said Quins will have to defend a lot better than that if they're going to win any more games this season. And then they won every game for the rest of the season. So, yeah, I think what you said about Leicester City vibes, there is a bit of that about them. I think they've got more chance of building on it than Leicester City did, because they've got, you know, solid front row, solid eight, and then you've got Smith and a really good back three, and they've got the big centre, Esterhuizen, who, you know, gives them a bit of a focal point at 12 as well.
He was really quiet, though, in this game, Ben. I don't know. You said you didn't see it, right?
No, I haven't seen it, no.
You've got no excuse. They've all been on the Premiership website for the whole weekend and today, so put a bit of back into it, mate.
Sorry, man.
The one thing, though, that you've got to remember, and it might be why Esterhuizen was quiet, is they spent all of last season with Marcus Smith at 10. Pretty much without fail, played every game at 10, and he's not there at the moment. And I think he is probably that much better than Tommy Allen, that he will make that back line click considerably better. That's not to say that they're a shoo-in to win or anything like that. I suppose the bigger point is these first however many games it is, three or four games, it's a bit hard to fully judge things. Worcester are missing no one, I don't think, because of the Lions.
Yeah. Other than the winger.
Oh, do I? Well, yeah, Van der Merwe.
Harlequins are missing Smith, who is absolutely key for them. And yet
they need to get used to that, mate, because Marcus Smith's going to spend a lot of time with England. And what I worry, I mean, does Tomasi Allen still plays for Italy, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
So when the Six Nations comes around, they're going to be without both Smith and Allen.
And the Autumn Internationals as well.
Yeah, Italy and Autumn Internationals as well, didn't they? So.
Yeah. So we've potentially got a situation there where Quins are looking at their third choice fly half I don't know what it ends up being, a considerable chunk, 20-25% of the season? And yeah, it's going to mess things up a little bit, but I don't know, I get...
Oh, Phil's turned into a robot.
I think, is he coming back?
I don't know. Let's carry on.
The whole Leicester City side. Oh. Getting into that top four.
Mate, we lost all of that.
Sorry. I was saying that compared to the Leicester City thing.
We lose it. We're losing this as well, Phil.
I think the Premiership's a bit different than the Premier League in that you can get into that top four.
I mean, this is class, top class internet-based podcasting. I love that. Did you mute him, Doug?
No.
Did he mute himself? Anyway, sorry, Phil. We'll bring you back in a minute when you've sorted out your connection issues.
I think Phil started on a point about the early part of the season. And one thing I've noticed is every team at the moment looks significantly more workmanlike than they did last season. I know it's largely, I would say, because of the Lions not playing at the moment. But, you know, if you look through a lot of these teams, there's what you would call sort of squad players in starting at the moment. You know, and I think it's mostly to do with the Lions, but I think when we went through the signings a few weeks ago, it wasn't the most inspiring list for almost any team, was it? The only one it really was for was Saracens, which was their own players coming back.
And it does, you know, no matter how many you think about it, it's going to boil down to the fact that no one's going to go down at the end of this season either. So they're all going to try and be competitive for 8 to 10 games and see where they are. And then there'll be teams that go, well, I'm probably not even going to make the top eight for the Champions Cup next season. So, you know, let's mail it in and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, even Bristol, for their sort of reputation as a sort of all-star team. Without Rodrada in there, it's not the most overexciting.
What's
15,
happened to him,
is
by
it?
The way?
I think he's just. Wasn't it something to do with COVID? He's quarantined coming back from Fiji or something like that.
Oh, isn't he stuck in Fiji? He couldn't get out off of the island or something. I think he's over there. I don't think he can get back. But I mean, just looking at that Bristol side, we'll move on to Bristol versus Quins, and it wasn't live, and we've all had the opportunity on the Premiership Rugby website to watch full game,
but haven't. Lazy.
What I will say is that Bristol side that they put out is about as close to full strength as it could be without Rajrandra. You know, Ewan Lloyd playing on the wing, Adeolokun, all right. Then they had Leoa and O'Connor, Piatow at fullback, Sheedy, Uren. Then they've got Faka, Lahif, and Jan Thomas, Dan Thomas, Vui, Hughes, Atwood, and Luatua. Like that team was beating teams out of sight last season.
Yeah, I'm not by any means saying they're a bunch of time wasters. I mean, it's still a very good team. But, you know, at one stage we were talking, you know, about Bristol, like, you know, the, like Wasps of the mid-2000s, you know, star names everywhere. But, you know, with due respect, that front row is basically cast-offs from other teams. You know, I think Atwood and Vui are both really good players and it's a good back row. But even the back line, you know, you've taken Malins out of it, not really replaced him. You know, you can't really replace Rodrada, but he's out at the moment. And it's almost, you know, brought their back line back to very similar to what a lot of other sides in the league have got. I mean, if you line it up against Wasps, you know, I'm looking at it now, there's probably less star power in the Bristol back line than there is in the Wasps one, or it's very close anyway.
I mean, you would say it's very close when you look at the Wasps back line, which started with Robson, Umaga, what would have been Le Bourgeois, Bassett, Watson.
You got Fekitoa. Yeah.
Crossdale.
So, you know, it's just, I think, at the moment, until everyone gets their star names back, the results are going to seesaw a little bit because the teams are very evenly matched.
That's one thing I will say. A lot of the teams do look very evenly matched. I mean, if you look at the teams that lined up for Exeter against Northampton, for instance, you know, that was a really young... Northampton had a really young back line. Like, their back line was Grayson, Dingwall, Furbank, Collins, Proctor, Slightholme. That's about as... I mean, they've all got decent Premiership experience now, but it's about as young as it gets on average, isn't it, surely?
Yeah, but this is the back line that Northampton been building for 2 years. This is kind of it all coming to fruition for them. And like, I'm not making excuses, because I said last week and I said tail end of last season that I don't think Exeter are the side that they were before. But if you look at who they are missing with the Lions, they're missing Karen Dickey, Johnny Hill. I don't know why Johnny Gray's not playing. I'm presuming he's injured. Simmons and Hogg. Well, that's a fairly punchy load of players to be missing. But you're right. Yeah, that Northampton backline is young and fresh and exciting and is starting to deliver, or continuing to deliver, on the promise that they've got.
The back five of that Exeter scrum isn't scaring anyone at the moment.
No, agree. I mean, Kirsten aside, Lonsdale, Tuima, Witty, and who's the other one? Armand. You know, they are this, like you mentioned, they're the squad players now. They're the fill-ins, the gaps when people are away. They're not Ewers, Vermeulen. I mean, you take out Armand, Witty, Lonsdale, and Tuima, and you put in Simmons, Gray, Hill, and Vermeulen,
Skinner. Ewers,
Skinner. It becomes a completely different prospect, doesn't it?
What's happened to the flanker that they got from Gloucester that I really rated? And Aaron... you played England...
Aaron Bentley? No.
No, Aaron... Oh, it will come to me. Talk amongst yourselves.
You're the best. You're the best at it. If there's one thing we know you for, Doug, it's your...
Aaron Hinckley.
Yeah, don't know. He must,
because he was the shit, and seems to have just disappeared. Another one. When he signed for Exeter, I thought it was the perfect landing spot because he was just this really abrasive, aggressive flanker that was quick. Reminds me a lot of oh my god, the Bath one. Looks like an orc.
Underhill.
Yeah. Looks like very underhilly. And I thought he was going to do amazing, but I can't remember him playing a game for Exeter at the moment.
He hasn't played a game for him.
I find that incredible that he's just wasting away there. I mean, what's he not doing, and why did he go there in the first place?
Don't know.
It's a great question. It's a question that maybe only Rob Baxter can answer at this point.
He was Premiership. He was breakthrough player. Won the breakthrough player in the Premiership Cup in his last season for Gloucester. And you think about the players that have done well in that competition that have then gone on to play in first teams regularly. But it just seems like that whole Exeter side just doesn't have any sort of academy progression. That you've got this fullback that looks like it's snapping half.
Hodge.
Yeah.
They got him from Newcastle, didn't they?
Yeah, but they don't seem to be, you know, considering that they've literally got the whole of the southwest finger of England to farm players from, which is essentially just two counties of farmers, you'd think they'd be pulling up quite a lot of players, wouldn't you? But
right, and there are quite a lot in the squad that are just not necessarily getting through to get a huge number of a huge amount of game time. But then if you look back historically at some of their players that are now kind of commonplace, they have come through the academy, like historically. So yeah,
I mean, it fits and starts and waves, isn't it? Like you tend to have, and you see it a lot in all sports, like you have gluts of academy talent. Like you have like a real rich crop for 2 or 3 years, and then you go through the next 2 or 3 years and you don't seem to have as many. I mean, Exeter bought through, like, you think Slade, Cowan Dickey, Noel all came through at the same time. Ewers, stick him in that category as well. Ben?
I was just thinking perhaps the pandemic is probably slowing down youngsters coming through as well. They've probably gone 18 months without playing a game of rugby.
Possibly.
So, you know, they're probably a bit behind on their development as well. And I don't mean just for Exeter, I mean for everybody.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So, you know, that could be a thing as well. I mean, we've almost got a full back line now, haven't we, in the Premiership of sons of 90s players.
Yeah. Grayson, Slightholm.
Ajomo.
Redpath.
De Glanville.
Yeah.
Hastings.
Yeah. Liner.
Oh. What team their dads made. Jesus Christ.
It wouldn't be a bad team of them either, would it?
Yeah, fucking me, imagine that.
Yeah, but...
Phil, you mentioned Ajomo there, Max Ajomo for Bath. They've struggled a little bit start of this season, Ben. They lost at home to Newcastle on Saturday. Again, it's a game I'm sure you've caught up with on replay on the Premiership website. Are you worried? Are you concerned about Bath for this season?
No, I can't go down, can they?
It's a great comment.
I mean, exactly the same as a lot of the other teams. Just on paper at the moment, they don't look as strong as they have done in the past. And again, as we've said, you've got Lyons come back, so you've got Watson to come back. And, you know, Faletau, Underhill didn't last very long in this game. And again, they've got some good youngsters, you know, the likes of Reed and Bayliss and a few others. But again, you just look at that team on paper, you've got a couple of veterans. You know, you'd probably call Rocco Degunia a veteran by now. He's not quite his old self. You've got a few South Africans who haven't really impressed at the moment.
Schumann doesn't look very good at all, literally from the minute he set foot on the pitch.
Who was that?
Schumann.
The prop, Schumann. I think they're just at the moment, again, a team in sort of transition. There's not a huge amount to get excited about, but, you know, you bring Faletau and Watson back into a team and suddenly defences are on their guard again. And obviously they've got Cipriani to come in as well at some stage. So, you know, I don't think they'll finish bottom, but they're not going to be troubling the playoffs either, I don't think.
No, interesting. A side that we thought would probably be looking towards the playoffs at the end of the season was Sale, or our Sale, should we say. And for 60 minutes on Sunday, they looked really good, I thought, to a point where I switched over after about 60 minutes on Sunday. Just at the point where London Irish started to come back, which was really good punditry by me. Manu Tuilagi, I don't think in all of the years that I've seen him play rugby, I don't think he's looked as lean and as fit as he does right now. He looks...
It's all the walking uphills he's been doing.
Is that what he's been doing, is it? Uphill, down Dale?
Well, yeah, because, like, do you not remember? Well, he was his wonderful head coach was talking about how much effort he was putting into getting fit and integrating, and they were talking about how much they were walking up hills. And, you know, another podcast took the piss out of that.
Sorry, mate, must have missed that bit. But he looks really, really good, and the age old Manu Tuilagi conundrum. If you can keep him fit, he will be an unbelievable asset to an England side. And I wonder by being a little bit fitter and a little bit leaner, whether that might aid him in avoiding injury a little bit. I don't know, but he looked brilliant. He looked brilliant on Sunday for 60 odd minutes of what I watched.
He'll have torn a pectoral muscle by Halloween.
I was just going to say, Phil, talk us through avoiding injury.
Yeah, don't try to play rugby. I went the other way, Russ. I picked up where you left off and I watched the second half, and I'll be honest, Sale looked incredibly kind of static in defense. They were not closing gaps, not hustling across, not shuffling, like playing drift defense in the inside man, just kind of taking it as an opportunity to have a breather and leaving huge holes on the inside shoulder. And it made Irish's job considerably easier. And I don't know, well, I'd put that down to a fitness thing as much as anything else. For some of those kind of tighter players. I mean, when you build your game around large physicality, there comes a point where mobility starts to suffer a little bit, And Irish just took advantage of it as much as anything else. Yeah, some really good clinical play for Parton's two tries, but nothing overly exceptionally clever about it. Sean O'Brien came on and was an absolute pest, as you would expect from him. But other than that, there was nothing exceptional. It was just solid clinical play and Sale leaving holes for them to go through.
They dropped off a bit of a cliff by the looks of things when McGinty went off injured. As far as an attacking threat goes, the young lad that came off the bench and played 10, not really up to much.
He was just a bit uninspiring, is the honest answer. Didn't see a huge amount of Tuilagi with ball in hand. They were kicking too much of it for my likings with not necessarily contestable kicks, which doesn't help. But then again, your kicks obviously become less contestable when your back row or your back five of the pack become knackered and less mobile. He didn't manage that lead particularly well. He didn't manage the game. What's his name? The Irish fly half.
Paddy Jackson.
Paddy Jackson did a pretty
all
good
at it
job
tonight.
Did a pretty good job of managing that side of it and kicked his kicks and got him back in it and scored a decent draw for him. I think they'll see that very much as a win, Irish.
Well, those sort of come from behind draws. They did it against Bristol last season, didn't they? In a quite an epic fashion. So they're certainly tenacious, London Irish, and they carry on and bring in the likes of Sean O'Brien off the bench, who you know might be advancing in years, but he certainly adds a lot to their team. And he gives that element of experience and he drags people along with him. And he's got weird levels of farmer strength.
He got given man of the match, which confuses me. Like,
he was only on the pitch for 20 minutes, wasn't he?
Well, I think a little over that. But he got given man of the match. And having not seen the bit when he wasn't on the pitch, that makes you think that it must have been pretty shit. But having heard everybody raving about Tuilagi, and then they give O'Brien man of the match for really not very much time wise. Yeah, I couldn't really get my head around it.
He's kind of what we're talking about though, isn't he? He's one of the few players that you could say has got a bit of star power. And although he might be past his best, you know, a 20 minute burst of him is
worth it.
You know, going to make a lot of difference to a team like London Irish.
Against a slowing
Sale
back row. Oh, yeah, they had Ross in the bin for 10 minutes as well, which didn't help them.
Well, there we go. That is the Premiership rugby in a nutshell for the weekend. Doug, where are you this weekend?
Back at the Cinch Stadium at Franklin's Gardens.
Is that what it is now? The Cinch Stadium.
Absolutely
brutal. That's awful.
Oh my days! And who are they taking on at the Cinch Stadium at Franklin's Gardens? London Irish. 2 o'clock.
Fantastic question. There you go. London Irish.
The big game on Saturday looks like Leicester at home to Saracens, which will be extremely interesting.
It's weird with these bye weeks, isn't it? Thinking, would have loved to have seen Saracens actually follow up that performance straight away, but they've had that game, then they've had a week off to sort of think about it. It's odd.
Bristol Bath on Friday night, and then rounded off on Sunday afternoon with Sale versus Exeter. So we'll see if Exeter can break their 0-2 record. Shall we get into any other business before we go?
Can we speak about, just do a quick bit about New Zealand, South Africa?
Yes, we can. I didn't watch that.
And it was a pretty tough game to watch. South Africa kicked everything. New Zealand knocked everything on. But South Africa were winning with 2 minutes left. And as they had done consistently throughout the game, Box kicked the ball away to New Zealand, who then won a penalty and kicked it from 50-odd metres to win the match. I just want to say that that could not have happened to a more deserving team. If you don't back yourself to keep the ball for what, three phases to kill 2 minutes, three, four phases, then you deserve to lose. And just going off of what has happened to South Africa in the last three rounds of this championship, it is an absolute travesty that the Lions lost to them.
Mate, we had this discussion last week.
It gets worse with every passing performance. It's a travesty because we basically mirrored exactly what they did and
didn't do it as well.
Didn't do it as well. I will never understand how we lost that series. It's insane to me.
Baffling.
Yeah. Luke Pearce refereed it and refereed it really well, I thought. He's actually becoming a very good referee.
That's good. One thing I have noticed, and it happened at the end of the Gloucester game, and it started to happen a lot, which might give a little bit of credence to why South Africa kicked it away, is when teams are trying to run down that clock in the last minute, 2 minutes of a game, referees are very hot on sealing off penalties and people going off their feet at that time more than at any other time in the game.
At that time and when doing pick and drives near the trailer.
And when doing pick and drive, yeah. And it just feels like if you're a team that's less than a score up with however many minutes to go, are you better off trying to give the ball back to the opposition deep and saying, well, we'll take our chances in defence, rather than take the risk of having the ball in hand and give away a penalty when you're trying to keep it really tight, you know, when they just do one out and basically...
I think the apparatus are there to be able to manipulate that situation now with the 50-22.
Yeah.
But you can't move a team around and aim to kick to keep possession. It seems to me that South Africa's first thing is, right, we're just going to punt this up in the air, either hope for a knock-on from the fullback or winger, or a turnover when we hit him. And New Zealand was just too good for that.
But these are, ignoring the 50-22, these are professional sportsmen. If they don't know the difference between being on their feet and lying on top of somebody, the whole world's gone wrong. These should be the skills that they're practicing week in, week out. How to, if you're going to latch on somebody, you have to stay on your feet. You can't just drop to your knees because you'll get pinged for it. If there's a ball carrier and you're not latching on them, you secure the ball safely. They practice it again and again and again. And yet it comes to a match situation and they're just flopping on the floor. I think the referee should referee all breakdowns in that way.
Yeah, all the time. No, I agree. But it seems that if a team is in possession and trying to see out time, nine times out of 10, for more than 2 minutes, I reckon, they will invariably concede a penalty. And it happens a lot.
Yeah, you're right. And it's really, yeah, not good enough.
And is it then poor game management by the team? Is it the referee being more officious because they know that the team is trying to run down the clock and just go phase, so that they're trying to actively stop that from happening? Yeah, maybe. How do you know the referees could be given a directive that says, we don't want teams for the last 3 minutes of a game just going one out, pick and go and killing the game? So,
well, but if that is the directive, then who make the directives are wrong because
I agree, and it probably isn't.
How many games by doing it for 10 minutes at a time at the end of rugby matches? So
yeah,
and staying on their feet when doing it.
I think if you get a lot of rucks in that time, don't you? And I think if you totted up that amount of rucks over you know, a slightly longer period of play if it was, if the ball was being taken more than one pass away from a ruck, you probably would find there'd be a penalty in that amount of rucks, usually, in open play anyway.
Going by law of average rucks.
Yeah, yeah. But also, I do think referees are more willing to cut you a bit of slack if...
Being positive.
Yeah, if you're trying to do something and you're trying to play the ball. You know, it's when someone's doing something to stop the ball coming out or to stop a competition that they do crack down on it. So it's probably a mixture of numbers, the referee's mindset, and, you know, I'm sure there is some kind of, if not a directive, maybe a sort of unspoken, you know, unspoken agreement with the referees that they will keep an eye on it. Of course, in that situation, there's not much else to keep your eye on.
Yeah, there almost certainly is a directive about people arriving on their feet.
Yeah.
There's more than a directive, isn't it? Isn't it a law?
Yeah, yeah. There's a directive for them to pay more attention on it. And there's a law about putting the ball into a scrum straight, but there's no directive about keeping an eye on that. But similarly, there were directives about directions of hands when passing the ball. You would back most back lines to be able to pass the ball around amongst themselves with every pass going backwards for 90 seconds or for 2 minutes or 3 minutes or however long. That's the level of skill that you're asking for. And I just think it's a failure of coaching that so many penalties are given for sealing off at the moment, because you know the referees are looking for it. And literally it's a matter of standing on your feet. That's all it is.
Like I said a second ago, the referee hasn't got anything else to look out for because he's only looking at that, you know, at the breakdown. There's no real imperative to look at the backs for being offside or anything to do with a kick, because he knows exactly what's going to happen. They're just going to pass the ball once and fall over.
Yeah.
Quite often the player is falling over behind the gain line. So the attacking team is coming, the defending team is coming forward slightly, which probably again paints a picture that they're in the right.
Well, and I think that's half the problem, is the players falling over. I think if they took it into contact in a positive way, it makes everybody's life a lot easier.
Maybe just continue the positivity rather than looking to just go and create a ruck. Take it into contact as you normally would.
But it's no different than a football team knocking the ball around amongst themselves for the last couple of minutes. You've got to be able to, if you've earned the right to be in a position where you can kill the game, then you should be allowed to do it. That's why you score points, so that you can control the game at the end.
Yeah.
I don't think it's negative. It's
well, so let me take you to Veal this Saturday. About 2.5 minutes from the end of the game, Veal are 7 points up, give away a penalty on the halfway line, gets kicked to touch. Then Newquay line out, lost the line out. There was a knock on in there somewhere, so it ends up being a Veal scrum 10 metres out on the 15-metre line. Their captain goes to the ref, how long left? And he goes, 1:15. They win the scrum. Bit of a challenge on the scrum, but they win the scrum. Pass the ball out to the 10, who decides the right thing to do is to put a bomb up with about 50 seconds left.
What an egg.
And to be fair, it was in the air for about 20 seconds. It's the highest kick I've ever seen. Obviously landed in the middle of nowhere, took a sideways bounce, got caught by the Hornets flanker, who ran outside their outside centre, got tackled by the fullback, offloaded it to the Hornets outside centre, one-on-one with a winger, put a little dink through, dived on, scores the try, kicks over, game's drawn. Because he's decided to boot the ball rather than actually doing something positive with it. So exactly the same as what you're saying, Doug, about what happened to South Africa. If you can't look after the ball for 90 seconds, you don't deserve to win.
Agreed.
There you go. That's a good place to finish the rugby chat, I think. Any other business? Doug, I'm not going to come to you first because I know what you're going to say. So, Ben, why don't you go first?
Can these rugby sites with a Facebook presence please find some new material?
they can do both, you know. They can play rugby and look pretty in dresses.
Mate, if I see that the difference between football and rugby is the 6'7" South African second row saying, "Yes, sir, one more time," I don't know what I'm going to do. Probably just go.
Yeah, tough.
Again.
Do some really aggressive huffing.
You're fired because you keep doing this.
Phil.
So I had a little vent in my any other business last week.
A little vent
about parents complaining about timekeeping. And I might have narrowed it down now to who it is.
So this week we're complaining about parents complaining about you complaining about
No. And I got a WhatsApp message from one of the parents who I didn't know listened, and I'm not sure is a regular listener. Which means that I probably ought to be a little bit more careful about what I say. It's not going to happen. But what I found most humorous was the text of the message he sent me, which was, "Ooh, someone's a bit tetchy on Ben's podcast." Ben, are you going around telling people this is your shit?
Look, class just shines through, mate. And I think we all know the...
That we've got none.
I mean,
exactly.
Sorry.
The most least.
I'm going to have to compute this. Ben's fucking podcast.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Oh, no, Ben's fucking podcast. That's the one he does on a Tuesday.
Not a lot of listeners, if I'm honest.
Oh, I'm never going to use him.
Leg over podcast.
Do you get many guests on that?
They're sex, but he does, but they're sex people then.
Sex people, Phil.
No way, you spastic, you're a mentalist.
You can't say that word anymore.
I just did, mate. Anyway. Doug, any other business?
Yep. Obviously, there's the fuel stuff, you know, makes my teeth itch, whatever. I'm sure that that'll come up on Long Snapper, and if we did a long leg, it'll be there, and people will be moaning about it. You've all seen the memes. For a minute there, it was touch and go whether I'll get to work this week. But a TV recommendation, if you've got Netflix, there's a Korean show called Squid Game.
Can I ask about this, Squid Game? Because my 12-year-old daughter came home from school
today. Do not let your 12-year-old daughter watch that.
She said, "Can I watch Squid Game?"
No.
Dougie said, "It's good."
really not.
Contains adult material.
Just do not let your 12-year-old watch Squid Game.
Okay.
Size that enough.
Fair enough.
But if you're over 18 and you're like, you'll watch the first episode and you think, "Oh, okay, I know what's going to happen here. We've got, what is it, 8 episodes left? 8 after that, I think." And then second episode comes and you're like, "Huh, didn't expect that." And then the third episode comes and you're like, "Okay, now I'm ready to go." So,
is it badly dubbed Korean into English?
If you're watching foreign programs dubbed in English, you're doing it wrong. Just watch with the subtitles.
Fuck off. I don't watch telly to read. I don't.
You're such a Luddite, man. You're such a dick.
Why in God's name would I want to watch telly and read at the same time? No, thanks.
You're such an idiot.
Am I an idiot?
I don't know why I'm mates with you. You're such a prick.
There we go.
I could just see Russ like watching a film and it just comes up and goes like London 1972. Yeah. And he just like throws his popcorn at the screen and storms out.
I didn't come here for fucking captions.
I don't mind a caption. Full on subtitles where I've got to follow it and read it.
Don't let him watch the end of a football match when they put the league table up. Jesus Christ. Tables will be flipped.
Well, he's a Spurs fan. Definitely don't let him look at the league table.
They put the score in the top corner.
I have with Tottenham. That's a fact.
Russ, do me a favour.
I'm not doing it.
Watch the
numbers. Just numbers on the back of shirt.
Remember when we had this conversation, Russ, about the NFL? Now look at you. You're going on podcasts thinking you're the man.
I don't go anywhere thinking I'm anything. That's fine.
Apart from a giant egg. seriously, just watch the first episode. Because in actual fact, there isn't a lot of talking in it.
I mean, that strikes me as even worse.
Is it mime?
Yeah. Russ, like the only thing worse, than movies with subtitles
Russ,
is silent
movies.
If I
ever had a TV recommendation that was up your street, it would be this. Please just give me the satisfaction of watching the first episode.
All right. I'll watch the first episode. I will watch it.
Okay. Good.
Not with subtitles.
Good. There you go. I feel like I've made a breakthrough there.
Oh, you will. I mean, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. My only other business is... I didn't really have anything, but what I will say is we have some of our first donations on our Just Giving page. And I want to personally thank both Ben Bacon and Duncan Keane for your very generous donations. And it was, it's really quite unbelievable.
Seconded.
what you've put in already. So thank you to you both so much. And we will share the links and we will keep sort of banging on about this now for a few weeks till we raise some money for Rugby Against Cancer. So thank you to Ben and to Duncan, who are long-term friends and listeners of the podcast and supporters of what we do. We don't always agree on everything we talk about, which is great, but they always support us. So thank you very, very much for everything that you do. That's it. Next week, next Monday, hopefully we'll all be back. Adam will be here to do a rugby-related quiz in the lead-up to the All Over Invitational, written by Guy, who I hope is recovering well from his operation. I've not heard how he's getting on, so hopefully if you're still listening to this, Guy, let us know you're getting on, and if you're going to make it to Cornwall, hopefully you're resting up.
Hopefully he hasn't.
I thought you were just going to say, if you're going to make it.
You're just going to make it. If you're going to make it, you know.
If he was a real man, he wouldn't have ruled out a short appearance.
Well, what you said, you're going to compare your injury to Guy's injury, Phil?
Not in any way, shape or form, no.
Sounds like you are, Phil.
It does sound like you are. And you're questioning his manhood.
Not the injuries, just the response to them.
Wow. I'm sure.
I want to see you there with boots on, Guy.
Sounds like you're questioning it, mate.
It really, really does. So, yeah, hopefully. I mean, I don't know what is in this quiz at all. And it could be majorly embarrassing for all of us and our lack of overall rugby knowledge. But it'll be fun nonetheless. So hopefully Adam will be here next week to do that for us.
Just keep answering Sir Alistair Cook and you'll get points.
Yeah. I don't think there's going to be an arbitrary point scoring system a la punching chat for this. But yeah, we'll see. And but then we'll be back next week. And then literally there's one more podcast before the Mall Over Invitational, which is really quite exciting. So
I'm starting to get nervous, to be honest.
What are you nervous about, mate?
Well, I'm shit at rugby, so...
I mean, you can't be as nervous as I am, the fact that you can pick the ball up at the back of a ruck or a scrum, but you've got to pass the ball to me.
Yeah. Well, there's that. I'm 42 years old, pushing, you know, my body's a wreck. I haven't had a drink for nearly 3 weeks.
I will change that.
Yeah, a bit. I haven't had a hangover in over a year.
Yeah, we'll change that.
And there's several things that I'm concerned about. I'm concerned that the shirts are going to be too tight. That's a really big concern.
That's interesting. I mean, a funny story to end on. I went out on Saturday for the first time in quite a while myself since, lost a bit of Terry Timber. I don't know whether I mentioned that. And I watched the boxing, and I got the last bus back to Fradden, and definitely didn't puke over myself on the bus.
On the bus.
Yeah, definitely didn't do that. And
were you asleep when you did it?
No, I wasn't asleep. I was awake, but there was a few people on the bus, and I was kind of leaning over, and I was like kind of using the crease of my elbow in a to try and disguise what was going on, trying not to make a mess, trying to swallow it at the same time. But and you know what's weird about it is that I didn't feel horrific. I didn't feel like I was going to be sick. But I had that little urge, and then once it started, it was just like, you just can't stop. And I was so ashamed. So I got in, like, oh, poor bus driver. I mean, I was the last person on the bus, and I kind of skulked off. And he must have known. He would have known.
On a bus by yourself, chundering.
No. I'd stopped being sick by the time I was the last person on the bus. But I then got off the bus. But then obviously he's got to go to his destination, and then I guess he's got to clean the bus. He's got to check it all over. And I just, Tracy said, I've disgraced myself.
And I
could be blacklisted from future bus travel, but who knows? So yeah, puked up on myself on the bus. And there's the title of this week's podcast, Puked on a Bus.
Last bus to Fradden, surely.
Yeah, well, I definitely puked on it as well. so poor from me. Which bodes really well for next weekend, doesn't it?
Oh, mate. I think there's a high probability that I'll be sick.
That's, it's what it is, isn't it? Anyway, right, that's the end of this week's podcast. We will see you all for a podcast next week, and then for the Mallover Invitational in less than 2 weeks.
Go well. Yeah, are we having a trophy for that?
Well, I we can discuss trophies.
I think it's probably right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right and proper.
Go well.
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.